They ran through the rain to the building. At first he thought there wasn't going to be anything on because he couldn't hear anything but the rain, and among some buses and a few old cars, saw nothing but a bunch of boys dressed as baseball players. But when he went in, he felt as if he had penetrated all of a sudden a magic domain. There were 100 or 200 blacks dressed in white from head to toe, white shirts and white trousers and white socks and white shoes, and their heads covered with white caps, which made them look just like a convention of colored cooks, he thought. And the women were also dressed in white, and there were a few white-skinned women among them, and they were all dancing in a ring to the rhythm of the drums, and in the middle a huge black man who was already old but still powerful and wore dark glasses so that only his white teeth could be seen perhaps as another part of the ritual dress, and who thumped on the floor with a long wooden staff that had a carved black's head made of wood with human hairs for a handle, and this old black man with the dark glasses sang, and the others answered as he shouted, "Olofi!" and paused while the holy word resounded against the walls and the rain. And he shouted, "Olofi," again, and then sang, "Tendundu, tendundu kipungule," and waited as the chorus repeated, "Olofi, Olofi, Olofi." And in that atmosphere, so strange and turbulent, yet cool and damply lit, the black master of ceremonies sang again, "Nani masongo silambasa," and the chorus repeated, "Nani masongo silambasa," and again his slightly guttural and hoarse voice sang out, "Sese madie silambaka," and the chorus repeated, "Sese madie silambaka," and again she came up close to him and whispered in his ear, "Divine," damn theater slang, he thought, but he smiled because he felt her breath on the back of his neck and her chin resting on his shoulder. The black man sang "Olofi," and the chorus answered "Olofi," and he said "Tendundu kipangule," and the chorus repeated "Tendundu kipangule," all the time keeping the rhythm with their feet and going endlessly round in a circle in a close group, knowing they were singing to the dead and praying that the dead might rest in eternal peace and that those still alive might be comforted and waiting for their leader to say "Olofi" again so that they could say "Olofi" and begin again with the invocation "Sese Madie" and then "Olofi." "Olofi is God in their language," he explained to her. "Well, what does the rest of it mean?" For me to explain what Olofi means is bad enough, he thought. Then, "There are hymns to the dead," he said. "They sing to the dead so that they may rest in peace forever." Her eyes shone with curiosity and excitement. She clutched his arm. The dance went on round and round, tirelessly. Young and old alike were frantically dancing. One small black man wore a white shirt completely covered with white buttons in front. "Look," she said into his ear, "he's got hundreds of buttons on his shirt." "Shh," he said, because the man had looked up. "Silambaka biko dioko bika diambe," and the old black man bumped his staff rhythmically against the floor, and great drops of sweat ran down his arms and face and made faintly dark patches on the immaculate whiteness of his shirt, and the chorus said after him again, "Bika dioko bina diambe," and close to the man in the middle, other ringleaders were dancing and repeating the chorus's response, and when the black man in the dark glasses murmured, "Take it," one of them, "Olofi sese madie, sese madie," and the chorus repeated, "Sese madie, sese madie," while the black man in the dark glasses thumped his staff against the floor vigorously as he wiped away the sweat with a handkerchief that was of the purest white linen. "Why do they dress in white?" she asked. "They are worshiping Obatala, the goddess of the pure and unblemished." "Then I can't worship Obatala," she said, perhaps as a joke. But he looked at her reproachfully and said, "Don't talk nonsense. It's true." She looked at him and then turned her attention to the old black man and said, ridding what she had said before of all insinuation, "Besides, it wouldn't suit me. I'm much too pale for white." "But you're wearing white. It's not pure white." And at his side, another black swayed in time to the music and something indeterminate which went against the rhythm and interrupted it with his fingers on his eyes, and he opened his eyes extremely wide and pointed to them again and emphasized the sensual and somewhat disjointed and mechanical movements of his body, which nevertheless seemed possessed by an unseen power, and now the chanting reverberated against the wall, "Olofi, Olofi, sese madie, sese madie," and invaded the whole building and reached two black boys in baseball caps who listened and looked on as if unwilling to embrace something that was theirs. and reach the other spectators and drown the noise of the beer bottles and the glasses at the bar at the back and flow down the steps of the stands and danced among the puddles in the baseball field and went on over the sodden outer fields and through the rain reached the aloof and distant palm trees and went on further into the wild country and seemed to want to surmount the far-off hills and climb them and crown their summits and go on higher still. Olofi, Olofi, Bika Dioko, Bika Dioko, Yambe, Bikan, Yambe, Yambi, Olofi, 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 but again se se madie, but again se se madie, but again se se, but again se se. That man's being sent, he said, pointing to the mulatto who had his fingers in his huge popping black eyes. Is he really? She asked. Of course he is. It's only the hypnotic effect of the drums, but they don't seem to realize it. Would I be affected by it, do you think? But before telling her that she would, that she could be intoxicated by that rhythm, he became afraid that she would rush off and dance with them. So he said, I don't think so. It's only for the benighted, not for people like you, who have read Ibsen and Chekhov and know Tennessee Williams all by heart. We're the heathen in this temple. She felt slightly flattered, but also flustered. Now she said, they don't seem benighted to me. Primitive, I agree, but not benighted. They believe. They believe in something neither you nor I can believe in, and they are guided by their belief and live and die according to its rules, and afterwards they sing songs to their dead. I think it's wonderful. Superstition, girl, superstition, he said pedantically. It's something barbaric and remote and alien, as far away as Africa, where it comes from. I prefer Roman Catholicism with all its sham. That's remote and alien too, she said. Yes, but there's the Bible and St. Augustine and St. Thomas and St. Teresa and St. John of the Cross and Bach's music. Bach was a Protestant, wasn't he? A Protestant is only a Catholic who can't sleep at night. He felt good now because he felt he was witty and capable of talking above the drums and the chanting and the dancing and because he has overcome the fear that he felt when he came in. And Sese. But again, Sese and Olofi, Sese Olofi, Madie Olofi, Madie, Madie Olofi, Bika Dioko, Bika Ndiame Olofi, Olofi, Silambaka, Bika Dioko, Olofi, Olofi, Sese Madie, Sese Madie, Olofi, Sese, Sese, and Olofi, and Olofi, and Olofi. The music and the singing and the dancing suddenly stopped as they witnessed how two or three blacks grabbed the mulatto with the frenzied eyes by the arms and prevented him from knocking his head against one of the pillars. He's gone, he said. You mean he's been sent? Yes. And now, I give you Antonio Hart and Michael Lipsey and the poetry of Nicolas Guillen, which we're going to read in the translations by Langston Hughes. Two poems. Let's see how this works. This is an experiment.